the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Get the full show straight to your phone. Subscribe now to the OTB AM podcast, wherever you get yours.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
David Wilder is with us. David, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys.
I'm going to start with the biggest sports news of the weekend. Mark Keane's last minute goal. Were you watching?
I wasn't. I won't lie.
Drama.
Look, I've seen the clips all over Twitter and all that. Look, it's if I was to be completely honest, Kerry have been better than Cork the last few years, so I wasn't expecting that kind of result. But at the same time, I'm delighted for everyone involved. Incredible performance, you know, to go and beat Kerry, and then in the style in which they did, you know, Mark obviously has come back from the AFL to pop up, grab the ball, stick in the back of the net to win in the last, like, kind of, you know, kick of the game is incredible. But fair play to them. I was too busy with the football.
Very good, very good. That's fair enough. I'm sure you'll have the semi-final and you'll have the Munster final and probably an All-Ireland semi-final to look forward to. Whereas poor Owen here, who's from Kerry, just want to remind everybody, that's his season is over, and it's a long, dark winter, nursing his grievances and sharpening his knives. That's what they do in Kerry in the winters.
I did see a funny tweet going around. There's enough time now to find fungi, so.
Right, well, let's talk football. Let's start with Liverpool. We were talking last week, is there any way that he can get the front four in the team together? And lo and behold, he does. And that first 15, 20 minutes, they were like, wow, this is absolutely sensational. But there's a bit of imbalance in the team maybe when that happens, is there? Or is that just what's going to happen against a team as good as Man City?
Well, I think if you look at it, right, the last few times that Liverpool have been away at the City Ground, you know, and played against Manchester City, they've struggled. They've not been able to win. And I think, you know, obviously listening to the commentary yesterday, they were probably right in the sense that Jurgen Klopp has probably thought, you know what, we're just going to go for it. We're going to try a different approach and I'm going to stick the four of them on. Firmino has always been kind of his golden boy, the one he loves because of his work rate. Yes, of course, we've highlighted his goals and his assists have kind of, you know, slowed up or dried up, whatever way you want to put it. And then Diogo Jota is the man in form. So it was a case of, can he find a way to put the two of them into the team, which he did. First half, I thought they were very good. They played really well. They had some great chances. Probably need to score the second or the third. Of course, you know, De Bruyne missing the penalty is a big factor, but you could just sense it in the second half. Both teams have massive respect for one another. Neither wanted to lose. I think City dominated the game second half, knocked the ball around really well, but didn't really create clear-cut chances. And it was kind of almost a respect for one another to kind of say, you know, we don't want to get beat. But I think Liverpool would probably be the happier of the two teams, you know, because of the position they're in on 17 points.
That is kind of the strange scenario that we're in this season, that so many teams have taken so many big defeats that yesterday wasn't necessarily about winning the game. It was just about you keeping your house in order, basically. And is that, I wonder, a microcosm of the season as a whole, David, where teams are going to, who want to chase a title, are probably going to try and keep things tight up until after Christmas and really try and push on and really try and win this title? It's all just about being in contention, basically, and not being too far adrift right now.
Yeah, you've got to be. That's the thing. Look, as every manager has said who's won the Premier League, you don't win it, you know, in November, December. You know, it's kind of only till March then when you start realising, like, you know, we've probably got 10, 11 games left where we're at the crucial time. I think that is the case if they want to stay in and around the pack. You know, Man City still have a game in hand. Of course, Liverpool are a point behind Leicester. So they're there. It wasn't... To lose to Man City yesterday would have been massive in the sense that Man City would have jumped right back up. They've kept them in the same position they've been in. So it's a psychological thing for Liverpool that they're still ahead of them, that they can keep kicking on. And they didn't get beat. And that was the thing. You know, you're taunting, they need to stay in the race. I think this season of all seasons is going to be very difficult because we've seen a vast number of players picking up muscular injuries, you know, with the amount of games they're playing, especially the teams who are in Europe. So it could be a case of who can, you know, stay in there and keep as many players fit. You know, Liverpool look like they've lost Trent Alexander-Arnold. We don't know how bad that is. Obviously, we're international break now for the next probably, 10 days, 11 days. So that'll be time for Liverpool to assess him. But whatever team can keep their best players, you know, fit and available and then stay in and around it. But it is, look, at the same time, it's wide open. you know, in the sense that, no, Chelsea are going well, Tottenham are up there, and of course Leicester are doing well. So I still think Liverpool and Manchester City will win it, but there are teams that are knocking on the door, and if they can stay in contention right up until, you know, the turn of the year, you never know.
Have you been in teams where this early in the season you're starting to see bodies drop like flies, like is the case with Liverpool at the moment? Is it a concern that you've still got months and months ahead of you and you've got these injuries that you need to clear up?
Well, I think it's more a case of the extent of the injuries. You look at Trent, we don't know what it is. It looked like a muscular injury anyway. I don't know if it was his calf, his hamstring. I don't know. But those are the kind of ones that are, like, you saw with Virgil, once he was injured, it was kind of like he's ruled out for a season, it's kind of gone. Now it's kind of how quickly can we get Trent back? We don't know how bad it is. Will he be out for 2 weeks, 4 weeks? Do you know, and then what games does he miss? Whereas kind of Virgil, you know, they're kind of ruled out for the season and that's it. And you kind of, you make peace with that after a week or so. Look, of course, Jurgen would love him there, but he's not. I played in teams, yeah, where we picked up injuries and then, I remember one where I got injured. I injured my hamstring, and then I remember getting assessed on the morning of a game, and I wasn't right. And the manager came to me, and we hadn't won a few games. I think we played Reading away. This was with Hull. We played Reading away, and we played Ipswich at home. And I hadn't been right, and I ended up playing the two games, and we won the two games. But I ended up making a right mess of my hamstring, and I was out then for, you know, the best part of 8 weeks. Because I try to force myself to play. So it is a case of getting it right and making sure that, look, I just wanted to play at that time. We had picked up other injuries and we were on course to be promoted. Inevitably, we were promoted through the playoffs at the end of it. But you've got to be very careful because, look, you know, Trent is the one I'm talking about, but he's a massive part of Liverpool's team. He's a massive part of the back four. So hopefully he's not too bad and then they can get him right and get him back out there.
Can I just ask you a question about that injury, right? Does the manager think in retrospect that losing you for 8 weeks, that there's the other side of that is actually he was part of a team that got the winning momentum back and that allowed us to go on? Or is it always in retrospect, like the team doesn't do as well when you're out of it for those 8 weeks? Like, is the manager's negotiation with himself different, obviously, from your negotiation with yourself?
I was my own worst enemy. I've played with a lot of players, you know, foreign lads who'd, if they had any slight niggle, if a toenail wasn't cut right or something, they wouldn't play. And they would protect their bodies. Where I think a lot, like, certainly for my own thing, I played when there was times when I shouldn't have played. My body wasn't right. It ends up costing you. Now, like, look, I'm 31. I'm sitting here on a Monday morning talking to you. Why? Because I had to retire through injuries. You know, my knee, I've had, you know, I don't know, 6 surgeries across 2 knees. From times when I always trained, I always, you know, made myself available to play, and it inevitably cost me in the long run. I should have probably looked after my body more in times when I should have said I shouldn't have trained or I shouldn't have played, but I just wanted to be there. That was probably my downfall. I don't think a manager would look at it like that, in the sense that as much as a manager wants to, you know, get that winning momentum back, as you said, I played in a midfield with Jake Livermore at Hull, where we'd won 8 games in a row. I picked up a knock, missed 2 weeks. Then we'd lost, I think it was 3 in a row. I came back in, we won the 2 games, but then I was out. Yes, the team then started to build back up and get better results. But the manager, every manager will love to have a full 23, 24 players available to him where he can then pick, you know, the starting 11 he feels is going to win a game. I don't think it would have been a case of, okay, I've got him back in, he's done a job for me. Now he's out, I'm okay, but, you know,
yeah,
the spirits are better and we're winning games. I think you still want everyone available. You know?
Yeah. I've got two last ones about the Liverpool game. I don't know if you saw the footage doing the rounds of Henderson shouting at the team. I think it was from a couple of games ago. It's like the one booming voice you can hear in the whole stadium. It's obviously another little gift that he has, is that his voice carries really well and it got picked up by the microphones. I presume you're not surprised to see him being the person who's talking the entire team through the game?
No, but that's I think when you look at captains of all teams, you've a lot of different captains. Seamus Coleman is very similar in the way he talks. He's always encouraging people. He's getting on to people when they're not doing something right. I think Jordan does that. I think it's been highlighted by the way, look, that's the type of captain he is. I don't know how many times I picked his brain about, you know, Steven Gerrard, what type of captain he was. He said he never really screamed and shouted that much. Used to lead through his performances and the way he conducted himself. I think it's just the quality that Jordan has. Of course, I put out a little tweet giving him some stick. He wasn't happy after the game. He rang me morning. But that's the way he is. I believe, you know, even if you look at, you know, the Manchester United players and they talk about the captain Roy Keane was, I think he was quite similar, that he was on to people with the standards they set. And at you can see the benefit of it because Liverpool players respond to him when, you know, he's encouraging them. He's trying to give them that little, you know, come on, you need to do more, you know, and it's nice and it's refreshing. It's kind of, I do really enjoy having, I won't say having no fans there, but I really enjoy listening to, you know, the players speak. I remember there was a famous incident when Bournemouth played Manchester United, if you remember, and I think it was Ramsdale that was in goal. And he was shouting at Smith, the fullback, to turn or show Mason Greenwood on his right foot. And then obviously he sticks in the top corner. But then there was the afters and Joe was picked up and people were like, oh, my God, they're, you know, constantly swearing and shouting at each other. That's kind of always happens. But it's nice to hear it. And, you know, I think a lot of it goes on under the cosh. You don't really see it as much. So it is nice to see. It does happen everywhere. I wouldn't say Jordan's the only fella who does it. I imagine, you know, there's players at Chelsea are shouting, and, you know, maybe not as much at Arsenal after last night's performance, but it does happen.
And maybe not as much at United. Kind of that was one of the things that it seemed like Roy Keane was getting at. But look, maybe somebody's going to isolate the audio footage from the United games and we'll see. And then the last thing was that the centre-back partnership at Manchester City seems to be growing. Though it took a little while. Obviously, it's going to take a little while for a new partnership to grow. But that's a good centre-back partnership that they have now that they can build a team on.
Well, you'd hope so. They've thrown enough money at the problem. I think Laporte has always been the mainstay. He's the number one. He's the equivalent of, you know, Van Dijk to Liverpool. And now they've, you know, they've signed a boy, Ruben Diaz, who seems to be a very good, you know, signing. He's fitted in nicely. So, look, they've had this massive problem since companies left. Can they fill the void? Certainly with the partnership they've built up, they look a lot steadier. Of course, you know, you've got John Stones, Nathan Aki, the young boy Garcia. They've got loads of players. And it's been tough for them, but inevitably they found this fella and they seem to be building up a good partnership. But I still think the big thing is, can you keep Laporte fit for the whole season? If they can, then they will be thereabouts knocking on the door at the end of the, you know, end of the year.
Liverpool still favourites in your view?
I actually tip Man City to win it. Right. I won't lie, even as a Liverpool fan. I just felt that they'd come back stronger after last year. I think that was probably part and parcel of Jurgen Klopp saying that we weren't going to, you know, spend loads and loads of money, and we all know that Man City were going to spend money. I still think they'll probably, Man City will dip into the transfer window again. Look, Aguero's been out. There's always question marks over Jesus, which I find interesting because he is a top, you know, top quality striker. I believe even his record yesterday, he's nearly a goal in every two games for Man City, and he's played about 100 and just under 160 games. So he does score goals, but he's not Aguero. So will they? I don't know. I did say City, but I would lean towards Liverpool, certainly the way that they're going and, you know, the impressive signing of Diogo Jota. But then can they keep Matip and Gomez fit for the entire season?
On Manchester United then, good win against Everton in the early kickoff on Saturday. Is this the real Manchester United, which is the most authentic version of this side that we've seen in recent weeks?
Well, it's finding that consistency level, isn't it? For the opening, I don't know, 20 minutes, Everton were the better team. They got their goal and obviously United looked flat. You know, looked like they had no confidence. And then all of a sudden, probably the one that stood out for me the most, I know people would be quick to highlight Bruno, was actually Fred. The way he kind of played, he was getting the ball and he was the one trying to play forward. It was almost, you know, after, you know, the loss in Champions League to Istanbul and Arsenal in the Premier League. They just looked, I don't know, they looked nervous, they looked flat. And sometimes a team always, you know, as we've watched many times with Ireland, whenever you concede, it's kind of the shackles come off and you start to play, you start to get on the ball, you start to demand the ball. And Fred was the one, and if you looked at, you know, for the first goal, like he fires the ball through the lines, which not a lot of the players were, you know, firing the ball forward, and they just changed. I was surprised. I thought Everton, you know, I know they've not been, you know, they've lost the last few games. They hadn't been, they had started the game well, but then once Manchester United kind of got a foothold in the game, they just went on, and Everton seemed to, probably a bit harsh, but they kind of fell apart. They couldn't get a grip of the game, and Manchester United just dominated. Of course, you know, when they're 2-1 up, Everton are going to throw everything at it to try and get an equaliser late on, and then they get caught in the counter-attack. But it's whenever Ole Gunnar Solskjaer seems under pressure, he manages to pull out a result. But the big question mark is, can, and every Manchester United fan would be asking themselves, is can we find that consistency? Can they put in that level of performance week in, week out? Even if you look at after the Arsenal defeat, when, you know, everybody was throwing their arms up in the air. They'd beaten Red Bull a week previous to that. And then it was kind of like, oh my God, what are we doing here? It'd gone from an incredible week for Ollie to, you know, Pochettino's on Monday Night Football. Is he going to take over? Then there was talks all over social media that, you know, Manchester United inquired about him. And then they go and they get a result. It's just, can they follow this up after the international break? That's the big thing. He needs to probably put a string of results together, which is going to be a difficult thing. Look, they have very good players. He seems that, for me, he seems to have found a team that works with McTominay and Fred, and then obviously Bruno in front of them. It seems to be the way. And you know, we'd highlighted Pogba. I think they'll look to move Pogba on in January. I think it's time for him to go, because obviously, look, he's not starting, he's not playing, and when you have a player that caliber who's won numerous Serie A titles, a World Cup, he's an exceptional player, and I don't think there'll be, you know, clubs short of wanting him. The Juventus president came out, I believe, and said that he was his number one transfer target, and they wanted to bring him back. So I think it's only a matter of time, and I think it'll probably benefit Manchester United in the long run, because then, you know, the less egos you have around the place, the better. And I imagine Pogba, he's a big character, he's a big player, but I imagine with that comes a big ego. So I'd be interested to see what happens.
In that game on Saturday afternoon, Seamus Coleman played the full 90 minutes. Matt Doherty played the full 90 minutes for Spurs at the weekend. For the first time now under Stephen Kenny, Ireland are going to have both of their right backs available. The problem now is that Enda Stevens is injured. And Stephen Kenny was just after saying the other day that it is quite possible both of them would have played against Slovakia had he been available, which is in relation to Seamus Coleman, obviously. Chances are they might play right and left of a back four. Is that how you see it, David?
Well, I don't want to pick the team. Of course, look, it's a very difficult one. Obviously, Seamus had been out for a couple of weeks and he came back in. I thought he'd be pleased with his performance. I felt he didn't get much cover from James Rodriguez in the sense that when Luke Shaw got forward, but that's probably the problem when you have a player like James, you know, who wants to get on the ball and be the creative one. He didn't really double up and, you know, help him out. And at times, Seamus got overloaded. I think people would be quick to point, you know, well, you know, Bruno's header comes from his side. But if you look at it, he's not getting much cover or much help. But look, it's an interesting one for Stephen. Seamus is the captain of the side. You know, his leadership will have been missed in the last few games. There's no doubt in that. And, you know, the type of player he is and the type of character he is. It's now, how does he fit the two of them in? He has gone with Matt. Of course, as you said there, Enda's picked up a knee injury. Hopefully he's okay and he won't be out for too long. But Matt has played left back. So it is a way. There is a way, yes. He could play the two of them at full back. But I imagine, look, he'll get them in. He might try run it against England, see how they get on. But he needs to... These are the difficult decisions of a manager. So I imagine, look, if it were me, I would put the two of them in fullback. Matt's well able to play fullback, you know, left fullback, should I say. So there's no problem there. It's just down to Stephen and what he feels is the best way.
All right, David, great stuff this morning. Thanks a million for joining us.
Cheers, guys.
OTB AM with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.